Chinese President Xi Jinping will be in the United States this week for his first face-to-face meeting with President Trump. Lots on the agenda, including North Korea, but also perhaps a common interest of the United States and China. That would be Africa. Both China and the U.S. have invested heavily in emerging markets across the continent in recent years, seeking economic opportunities and maybe even geopolitical advantages. Joining us now is Aubrey Ruby, an Africa investment advisor and a visiting fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center. She's co-author of the book, The Next Africa, An Emerging Continent Becomes a Global Powerhouse. And Aubrey Ruby, the population of Africa is rapidly increasing. It's 1.2 billion today, but the UN estimates it will double to 2.4 billion by 2050. Why such a population boom in Africa?
Well, it's a population boom similar that we saw in Asia. It's just delayed about two, three decades. And, you know, it's a very young population. So of those billion-plus people, 70% of them are under the age of 30. And the population growth rate hasn't fallen at the same rate we've seen in other places. So still in parts of Nigeria, it's common for a woman to have, on average, five children.
And I imagine that many of the children who are going to be born in Africa over the next few decades are going to be born into poverty.
Yes, poverty rates are high still, but they've been decreasing steadily. Despite all the headlines, there are some good points of news in the world. And one of them is that, you know, a lot of those children who once would have died in infancy now make it a full life. And so that's another reason why that population is so large, is that the health statistics are improving and actually poverty is reducing. The question we have to ask ourselves is poverty reducing fast enough?
And where is the growth likely to be concentrated?
Currently, the countries growing fastest on the continent are in East Africa. So you see Ethiopia, Kenya, and Rwanda still growing around 6 to 8%. We've seen a slowdown in growth in West Africa. Nigeria is just completing a fourth quarter of recession. And that's because in part of the commodity price slowdown that we've seen globally.
So which countries are poised to lead the Africa of the future?
Well, there's no doubt that Nigeria will be a major player because, as you started this conversation with the demographic projections, Nigeria is going to be the largest by far. The population right now is around 180 million, but by 2050, it'll be larger than the United States, around 400 million. And so Nigeria, no doubt, cannot be ignored, even though the growth has been slowed this past year and a half. East Africa as well, when I say that, Ethiopia has about 95 million now, also a fast growth rate. And Kenya is steady, but both of them are experiencing significant growth because their economies are more diversified than you see in West Africa.
Okay, so that gives us a little bit of an overview of what is going on in some parts of Africa. But one thing that we know is happening in Africa is a dramatic amount of investment from China. Tell us what the Chinese are doing in Africa.
So yes, Jeremy, I take somewhat issue with calling the Chinese interaction in Africa investment. So there is no doubt that China is Africa's largest trading partner. The trade has increased dramatically, and it's up to $200 billion. But when it comes to investment, the U.S. is still the largest investor from an FDI, a foreign direct investment perspective, larger than the Chinese.
But the Chinese are still doing a lot in Africa.
Correct. And most of that comes in the form of infrastructure. So, for example, the government of Ethiopia has a railroad that was just completed that goes between Djibouti and Addis, the capital of Ethiopia. That project was financed by the Chinese, but financed in an intergovernmental relationship. So between the Ethiopian government and the Chinese government, they worked out the financing, and then a Chinese contractor executed the projects.
And why do you not consider that investment?
Because then, at the same time, the government of Ethiopia paid for that project. So at the end of the day, they're the ones that borrowed the money from the Chinese, and then the money was paid to a Chinese contractor. So at the end of the day, it's the government of Ethiopia that invested in that. Just because a Chinese contractor did it the world sees it as Chinese investment. And so I think it's important to recognize that part of the Chinese going out strategy that has included African markets has been centered around keeping a construction boom alive in China.
Has China, though, gained power as a result of some of the deals that it's done in Africa?
Certainly. You see growing, deepening relationships. Now, China's interaction in African countries is not new. It's kind of followed three main waves. You saw the 1960s period through the 1990s when there was kind of periodic ad hoc engagement, often around political agendas. But then post-2000, you saw a significant increase in trade, a ramping up to the $200 billion that we see today, plus these infrastructure projects. And now you're starting to see a more of a diversified approach. Now there are new Chinese companies, like, for example, in technology, like Tecno, making cheap smartphones, or Huawei, which is a competitor to, like, Ericsson. They're doing a lot on the continent on an FDI basis that's not a governmental project. But the influence that you see is most concentrated in countries with poor rule of law. So while the better the rule of law is in a country, the more U.S. or European investment will be in that country, Chinese commercial engagement does not follow that same pattern.
They'll invest anywhere it makes sense for them to invest, regardless of what's going on in that country.
Correct. So you see them heavily concentrated in countries like Angola, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, as I mentioned. And so as a percentage of those countries' investment and trade, China plays even a bigger role than in countries, say, like Kenya.
What about the United States? What are we doing in Africa right now?
Well, as I said earlier, the U.S. Is still a major investor. We American companies are putting projects all across the continent. You see, for example, I helped Procter & Gamble make a large investment in Nigeria to do diaper production because, as we said earlier, there's all those babies that need diapers. You see more and more U.S. companies getting interested. But they're interested in the world, and African countries stand in line. So you find some U.S. companies saying, well, we're behind in Brazil right now. African countries will start looking at in a few years. So it depends on the country and it depends on the sector, but U.S. companies are still quite active.
Are the African people, and I realize that is a really broad term to describe people in a lot of different parts of that continent, but are they being helped by this foreign investment?
So, sure. I think fundamentally, Africans have the same right as everyone on this planet, which is a right to dignified work and jobs. And so this investment creates jobs of a variety of forms. So U.S. companies are huge employers on the continent. If you look at Coca-Cola and GE and Procter & Gamble, they employ thousands, tens of thousands of Africans. And it's incumbent on all partners to try to figure out how to create the jobs for that next wave of young Africans, because the labor force of the future will be concentrated in African countries.
But I wonder also about how much exploitation there is by these foreign companies getting in there and maybe profiting at the expense of the people and the environment in Africa.
I think you see a differentiated approach between U.S. and Western European companies that are very concerned about things like sustainability and corporate social responsibility. You don't see as much attention to that among Chinese investors, but it's increasing. But African countries have more partners to choose from than ever. So it's not just the Chinese, it's not just the Americans or the Europeans who all have long histories in the region, but Turkish trade has increased dramatically, and India. India is getting more involved, and Indian companies are deeply engaged in East Africa.
Aubrey Rubey, as you look at Africa in 2017, you see war and drought causing famines in Somalia, South Sudan, political instability in some places, public health crises like HIV/AIDS and malaria, polio reemerged in Nigeria last year. Is that image of Africa accurate or just part of the larger picture? Or what would you say to people who, when they think of Africa, they think of all this disaster?
Yeah, the challenge we've had around understanding Africa and Africa and markets in general has been that there's like a pundit's pendulum that we swing from, which is on one hand, we're always talking about Afro-apocalypse, all the things that you just discussed. And then a couple years ago, everyone was jazzed about Africa Rising. And my message is that it's both. It's the same way that you can find at the height of Wall Street a billionaire walking out of his office passing a homeless person. We, in every day in our lives, hold that kind of complexity in our minds. But then when we want to look across the ocean at an African market, we want it to be simple, all bad or all good. And it's neither and both. And so I look and I see young entrepreneurs who are raising Series A, Series B, Series C rounds out of Silicon Valley. I see tech platforms that are increasing and growing. You see an incredible formalization of informal markets that are producing mass opportunity for people. So in addition to all those bad things you see, there are so many good things happening across the region.
That's Aubrey Ruby, who is an Africa investment advisor and a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center. She's also co-author of the book, The Next Africa, An Emerging Continent Becomes a Global Powerhouse. Aubrey Ruby, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.